Good evening, this is Mark Lynch, and this is Inquiry. My guests tonight are Greil Marcus, writer, award-winning author. His latest book is Under the Red, White, and Blue, and Werner Solors, the Henry B. and Anne M. Cabot Professor of English Literature and Professor of African and African-American Studies at Harvard University. And we're talking about the massive volume that they edited, A New Literary History of America. Greil and Werner, welcome to the show. I am very pleased to be talking to you about this massive volume.
Well, we're glad to be talking with you.
I don't know what I thought. Greil was the one that sort of turned me on to this, and I had no idea what this book was going to be. I got it, and my jaw dropped. This is a massive, complex book. How did the project originate? Verna, you want to talk about that first?
Yeah, well, Lindsay Water had edited or put out through Harvard Press a literary history of France and a literary history of Germany. And so the idea was to do something as a sequel to that. But they had very specific qualities, quite different from what we ultimately came up with. But the structure is similar in the sense that rather than having a cohesive narrative with an introduction, the beginnings, the middle period, the end, the wars, and so forth, they're just short essays, a whole series of them, about 200, held together. They have to provide their own context by describing the works or the themes or the topics in a concise way.
When you were starting out in this project, were these topics assigned to the authors? Were these essays that already had previously been published elsewhere?
No, none of them had been published before.
Oh my God.
That was something we set up right at the start, that everything had to be original. We had an editorial board of about 10 people with who are specialists in various fields, although everyone ranged over every conceivable area of inquiry. And we started out with the idea that, what we wanted to tell a literary history of America, not precisely a history of American literature, but a history of America in terms of what had been written, what the imaginative purchase on the idea and the reality of the country were. And so, we assembled this board, we sat down, what should we include? And, with no specifics, with no necessities, what should we include?
Oh my God.
We ended up starting with an essay on the first time the word America appeared on a map. So there is the beginning of our literary history, one word. It took 2 years to complete this book, which I think Werner and I were both completely shocked at.
It
took 2 years.
I'm actually surprised. This looks like about 10 years' work.
Well, we were vicious taskmasters.
But we also rejected some essays.
I have so many questions about how you managed this. Did you actually ask the people to write on a specific topic, or did people come to you saying, I'd like to write an essay on this?
Before, we had this editorial board meeting, and the idea was, there should be a new form of a literary history. So what absolutely must be in it, according to you? So each one had the right to contribute a certain number of pieces, but we had ultimately 400 proposals for a book that could only have 200 essays. So it started out with whittling down or making double entries, like Faulkner's Absalom, together with Gone with the Wind, including things in an essay that has another hook, so that we could cover a little bit more. But as Greil was saying, we were, of course, worried from the very beginning, what's the first essay?
Yeah.
You know, do we do what's now very popular again, Columbus bashing, and we don't start with Columbus? So we started with the word America, but actually Columbus appears in the first paragraph of that essay with the discovery of the islands. That didn't make such a big difference until the name America shows up from this map maker that offered us a very, very good beginning on a single word, which left the question of how would the whole thing end. That was also open-ended. We had many discussions about it, and it was the flood in New Orleans that seemed a very good way to bring in how many American writers have dealt with writing about floods in very, very good ways. And all our essays quote from the work. So that was the ending we had in mind. But then Obama was elected, and so we thought, well, we don't know what it means, but maybe somebody will come up with something about it. And so we asked Kara Walker, who had also written essays, but she decided to give us this visual work at the end, which is a big question mark. What does the Obama presidency mean?
I found the two end pieces to be absolutely amazing, especially I'm a huge fan of Kara Walker's work. I've always loved Kara Walker's work. And I thought it was sort of a brilliant way to end this book. Now, was there a mission statement that you started out? Like, what did you want each essay to achieve?
We wanted each essay to stand alone, as Werner said, to create its own context. I mean, this is an enormous book. We didn't expect readers to start at page one and just plod on until they reach page 1100 or whatever it is. We figured, you know, people would dive in and dive out, and so each essay had to map its own territory and then fill it in. And what we were shocked by, when we had all the essays in front of us, is how many essays in groups of three or five or ten, sequentially, written by different people without consultation with each other, ended up pursuing similar themes. So there are threads moving through from one essay to another, so that each piece, while having to stand alone, relates to the others in ways that we never could have predicted, and certainly didn't attempt to make happen.
No,
so that was quite remarkable, that certain strains in the American experience and the American imagination attracted all these different writers, and the people kept trying to, what is the essence of this? You know, with Longfellow, what is this really about? Why has it lasted? Why do we care? We ranged far afield. We had one two-day meeting where we hashed out, as Werner said, how do we reduce these 400 suggestions to 200? And we did that. And then we had another two-day meeting, sometime later, with the same people. Who's going to do what? And, you know, and each editor, each part of each member of the editorial board, as well as Werner and myself, contacted the people we wanted to write a given essay. I went through three or four people until I found the right person for the essay on Absalom, and Gone with the Wind. I contacted all these Southern writers who I knew, and they all said, oh, Gone with the Wind? Well, I've seen the movie. I never actually read the book. Are you kidding? I've read the book. And for the Lincoln-Douglas debates, we had this great idea. Let's contact Barack Obama. He's just been elected United States Senator. He, was part of the Harvard Law Review. He's in Illinois. I mean, what could be more perfect? He was a state senator in the Illinois legislature. This is absolutely perfect. So we called up his office. We laid out what we had in mind. And we were told, well, the senator couldn't possibly do that. He's much too busy getting ready to run for president. We thought, president of what? What are you talking about? He was just elected senator. No. Well, it shows what we knew.
What was amazing for me is my experience with the book, and I don't know if it's typical. First of all, when I finally get this book and I just like ba-doom, put it on, let it land on the table. I didn't want to approach this chronologically, although the essays are chronological in their content, not in which they were written. I end up looking through the table of contents and sort of making a short list of about 30 essays that I definitely wanted to read just based on the title or the subject matter. For instance, Thomas Pynchon and Gravity's Rainbow. Mm-hmm. And what I find myself doing is I would read this essay, which would just, there was so much to think about in this one essay, but then I would notice the essay either right after it or the right before it went, oh, wow, that looks really interesting too. And I ended up getting lost in the book because you would sort of pinball through all the different essays. And each one of them, amazingly, that I've read, and I've read about half the essays in the book so far, held my attention because it was a new take on something. It was a new approach or a new idea or a new concept of or way of thinking about that subject matter. And Greil's right. For some reason, there were these threads that run through the book that seemed very organic. They didn't seem forced. And it's an experience reading this book.
That happened to us too when the essays were coming in, and I proofread a whole number of them in the mid 1940s, and you know, there's the atomic bomb, there is the drip painting, there's the integration of the armed forces, and all of a sudden you have a very, very strong period feeling while each piece asks questions about the subject at hand. So you asked about the general, like a maxim that was given out at the beginning. I think the only thing we had of that sort was you should surprise yourself in writing this. Don't write anything with, I've written 12 essays on this. I do it in 5 minutes, and then the subject is closed. But, you know, try to look at a subject really from a fresh point of view. Don't bore yourself writing it. Make it interesting to a general reader, and make it interesting to yourself. And then when the first essays came in, it became also a format that one could circulate essays that had come in, and then others would see the form of it. And therefore, I think there is a certain amount of formal homogeneity. And none is much too long. They all have a hook with a date. We worried about an end line of the essays, that they don't just drift out, or somebody died, or the hook shouldn't always be a publishing date. That's boring. So, you know, trying to make it livelier by providing these guidelines. But we never had a kind of, this is the way it should be. It was just the idea, surprise yourself, get into the subject, and try to get out of the subject what you can.
Were they limited in space? Like, were they limited by the number of words?
Like, yeah, we had nine typewritten pages.
Okay,
The ideal length, and we had one contributor who said he could only write two essays. I mean, an essay would be twice the length. So we offered this person to write two essays on the same author, but then ultimately he backed out and didn't do it. But otherwise, people were remarkable in keeping the length. So a couple of them are a little bit shorter. A couple of them are just maybe two pages longer. But none is, all of a sudden, you read a 25-page piece that would really have been wrong in the format.
Well, first of all, go ahead.
There was a lot of improvisation that went on. There was one essay on Billie Holiday that Robert O'Malley took on, and he wrote a 6,000-word piece on Billie Holiday and her place in literature, among other things. Well, the essays were limited to 2,500 words. I'm a pretty good editor. I had no trouble cutting his 6,000-word essay to 2,500 words, sending it back to him and saying, you know, is this okay? And he said, yeah, it's okay. But what pained me about this was that half of the essay was taken up by a long digression about the novelist Gail Jones, and in particular her novel Corregidora, which is a novel that I absolutely loved. And Gail Jones is an unappreciated, almost forgotten African-American novelist from the 1970s, when she did her most noteworthy work. And I said, listen, let's just carve a Gail Jones essay out of this, and we'll put her in the book, too. Well, Werner and I discussed this. We didn't run it back through the entire editorial board. We just made it happen.
you guys do realize what an amazing editing job this is.
Well,
yeah. I think there were, this is we like were this is like lucky. Editing the Titanic. I mean, it's like this huge, massive collection of essays. I mean, this is why I wanted to talk to you about this, because I'm just impressed by the fact that it got together. It's an amazing feat that you did this.
Well, we had great people, great authors. A great editorial board. One of the editorial board members was Gerald Early of Washington University in St. Louis. And Gerald is a great polymath. He can write about anything. He can write about movies. He can write about boxing. He can write memoir. He goes all over the place with tremendous authority and curiosity. And he suggested God knows how many essays that we ended up, topics that we ended up including. And he wanted to write them all. And we said, no, you know, nobody can write more than two essays. And he said, well, I'll use a pseudonym.
Oh, no.
And at one point he said, when we were deciding, you know, what do we include? And somebody said, we've got to use the Pez dispenser. Well, we got past that one pretty quickly. And Gerald said, well, I think we ought to include Ordeal. And people said, Ordeal, what's that?
Linda Lovelace.
Linda Lovelace's memoir. And he said, listen, what is the most dominant literary genre of the last 20, 30 years? It's the memoir. And in particularly, it's the memoir of abuse. And he went on and made this case that, you know, this was a crucial thing to include. And my God, everybody, he convinced everybody, and we ended up with an absolutely shockingly great piece by Anne Marlowe on this. Ishmael Reed wrote on Huckleberry Finn.
Right.
And it was a very controversial essay. Some of the people on the editorial board hated it when it came in, and they thought it was, you know, dismissive. They thought it was unserious, and Ishmael, you know, confronted the book not as if it were a holy totem, but as if it were something that was still alive and still trouble. And it ended up being one of the most, one of the essays that, that reviewers focused on most directly, saying, my God, I never expected anything like this. Well, we didn't either. You know, we trusted writers. We figured, who would have something to say about Huckleberry Finn that we wouldn't expect, that we don't know? That was the test.
And that's what makes this book so lively. And that was a term that Werner used. And it really is true. I mean, people in the audience, I'm not kidding you. This is a fun book to read in the sense that it's going to surprise you all the time.
It was also really fun to put it together. I mean, it was a lot of work.
it has to be a lot of work.
It was fun. When some of these essays came in, you know, you would just cheer. It was amazing. I remember Farah Griffin, who was also on the board, and she took on a putative meeting of Edith Wharton's Lily with Theodore Dreiser's Carrie. And, you know, just sort of taking that as an imaginative entry into talking about novels in the time of realism, and also particularly what happens to heroines in those novels, was a wonderful piece that, you know, I was so happy when that came in. You know, you just say more, you know, send more of this. And you asked about the reading order to Greal Device's wonderful scheme of saying, pick a card, pick any card. You know, you just open it randomly and start reading. And then as you were describing it, you go back and forth. And, you know, maybe the essay next to it might be interesting. And you don't have to, you don't feel obliged to read it from page one.
No, I strongly recommend that people let an essay live in their head for a bit before moving on to the next essay. Because they're also self-contained, and you don't want to lose that sensibility. You don't want to, that feeling of that essay too fast. You want to, you don't want to miss, move on to the next new thing. So I found myself ruminating for a while, and then go, no, I got to go now read this essay. And I want to make it clear to the audience: this is not just literary works in the traditional sense. It, these are essays about films, magazines, the atomic bomb, art. And again, the last entry is a collection of works by Kara Walker, which totally surprised me. And so it's really a different thing. Like, I immediately gravitated to the essay about Psycho, the movie. I was, could anybody tell me anything different? Give me a different attitude about that. And I read the essay about Linda Lovelace, but then I read a lot of other essays too. And you both wrote essays and together wrote the final essay. And Verna, I wanted to talk to you about Edward Taylor.
Yes.
What, I had never heard of Edward Taylor before your essay. Talk to me about why you chose that.
Well, this is an autobiographic thing. It was one of the first seminars I took in American literature was reading Edward Taylor, who at that time, you know, had more or less just been discovered, and his complete works were being published. And my professor made us read all of his poems. I thought he was really remarkable.
Really odd. Really,
I want to write about him. Really odd. Yes.
Very odd. They seem contemporary.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, as a kind of homey imagination and dealing with serious religious issues, and of course sitting in this lonely place in Westfield, in Massachusetts, and you know, writing every time he administers the Last Supper. These meditations and meditative poems along with the prose meditations, and they're really fantastic. I mean, he's the only American metaphysical, full-blown metaphysical poet, but I don't think he's taught very much anymore.
I never learned about him until I read your essay. Now I'm fascinated by him. Greal, you wrote an essay about Moby Dick, and I wanted to ask you, did that dovetail into your current book?
Sure. I mean, here was the thing with Moby Dick. Obviously, we wanted to include Moby Dick, and we wanted to include Faulkner's The Sound and the Fury.
Yeah.
And we had essays on, we had assignments on both out, but the essays that we received were either not good, that we had to turn down, or veered off in another direction that was still legitimate. The piece that was supposed to be on Moby Dick ended up being about the meeting between Melville and Hawthorne. Well, that was an epochal event, and the essay, you know, made that case. But we reached the end, and we found we don't have an essay on Moby Dick. We don't have anything on The Sound and the Fury. So Verna and I said, well, we'll just flip a coin. see who writes which, and that's what we did. And I ended up with Moby Dick, Verner
with
The Sound and the Fury. Yeah. It could easily have been the other way around.
We tried many Southern Faulkner Prize winners to write on Faulkner, and I think, didn't we also try Philip Roth to write on Moby Dick?
Yes, we did. Of course, we tried many things, but it fell to us at the end.
Mm-hmm, so odd to have those two uncovered at the very end.
Talk to me about writing an essay together. We're going to run out of time here. You wrote an amazing essay on Hurricane Katrina, which I thought was a very fitting way to end this book. How did you approach working together, writing together?
Well, it was Werner's idea. Werner, why don't you talk about this? It was your idea to end with the flood.
Well, I mean, I think some of the editorial board wanted something apocalyptic, post-9/11 atmosphere. And, you know, then there was also maybe it should be really a diatribe against Bush. You know, nobody knew what was happening well, in the future. Sorry about
that. Now, those seems like the halcyon days now.
Right, exactly. And so I thought picking up some of the striking language about floods to evoke the power of the New Orleans floods through writing, and then also put it into the context of failing, a political structure that actually would help people in a predicament like that, I thought would be a very good ending to accommodate also the different factions on the editorial board. And and then I collected some of these writing about them. Senator Greer wrote back and picked some others, and then the whole thing grew. I don't even know at the end. I wouldn't be able to tell which line was my line or which line was Greer's.
It also has one of the best endings of any essay in the book. And what struck me is that Greer, having just written and published the book on The Great Gatsby, which has one of the great endings, ending sentences. And this one has, she had seen the country, the United States, in all its power, seen it plain, read its symbols, saw its history, her history, playing out before her eyes, past and present. She had seen the country and saw it disappear. And I think that's one of the most powerful ways to end an essay. I mean, kudos to both of you guys for doing that.
Yeah, that's not bad.
Greer, I love you.
And that would have been followed by the end, but then
the putting visual works after that doesn't change the power of the final final words at all. And that was sort of, is there a way to access Kara Walker's paintings full size?
No, she did this for the book.
Oh wow!
I mean, wow. When there was this decision that the book had to address the election of Barack Obama, I was against that because who knows, it just happened, what the significance of this will ultimately be. Well, once the decision was made, then we said, well, who would we like to hear from about this? And any number of people, including Werner and myself, said, well, Kara Walker, what does she think?
Wow.
Without knowing Kara Walker, I called her up. I discussed it with her. And I said, could you come up with something? And I forget what I said, a month or whatever. And I thought she was going to write an essay because, as Werner said, she does write essays. And instead, she produces this extraordinary portfolio.
Right.
Of images, which were all originally made. This was her essay.
Oh, my God. We're going to have to end at this point.
And the only way you can see it is in this book.
This is an amazing volume. My guests tonight have been Greer Marcus, writer, award-winning author. His latest book, Under the Red, White, and Blue, make sure you read that. And Vernus Zolors, the Henry B. and Anne M. Cabot Professor of English Literature and Professor of African-American Studies at Harvard University. And together they have edited one of the most wonderful books about America, A New Literary History of America. It does not disappoint. Make sure you pick it up and then dip into it. Greer and Werner, it's been a real pleasure.
Thank you very much, Mark.
It's great to wave to you across the continent.
I know. Werner's speaking to us from Venice, and I envy him no end. You're listening to WICN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. Good night.